Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, podcaster, meet Acast. We're the top independent podcast network for creators in the know. We empower you to develop your podcast idea, find your audience, and grow listener relationships wherever those listeners are. You'll also find a whole range of ways to make money, from membership plans for paying fans to our fully curated and creative advertising experience. Visit acast.com/network to find out more. Acast, for the stories.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Hey, Juicy Lemoners, before we start the show, we wanted to remind you to follow and subscribe to us on whichever podcasting app you're listening to. And as always, enjoy the show.
Have you ever been discriminated for your race by someone from your race? This week on Lemon, how has the latest Modern Love episode started a discussion about internalized racism? And why has a church pastor made tabloid headlines in the entertainment blogs? And as always, we have some new exciting recommendations to share with you. Each week, we dissect the conversation Asian millennials are having, so don't go anywhere because you're listening to Lemon.
What a time to smell the open fire, untangle Christmas lights and dress up a star. Oh, what a time.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Lemon. As always, my name is Philip Kuch.
My name is Thomas Tan.
And my name is Monica.
Hello, Monica.
Hi. Thanks
for being a fresh voice in our show.
Thank you.
Now, whenever I listen to a new podcast and there's a new voice, I always love knowing who the new voices are. So give us a brief introduction, like what do you do for work? Without naming where you work, of course. and just like... Who are you from? What are your origins?
Okay. So my name is Monica and I'm Phil's longtime friend from uni. I think we met one night when we were out and we bonded over our exes. Yes. Just our hatred.
I used to play a lot of Adele songs to purposely make her cry.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Phil made me a whole playlist to make me cry. Yeah. Oh, wow. Just cry all out.
Cool. Music therapy.
Yeah, it is. It was music therapy. And I do communications for a, I would say it's a non-for-profit slash.
Very important non-for-profit.
Very important non-for-profit. Yeah. Can you call it that?
Yes, you can.
Yes. And it's in the area of multicultural affairs. So it's something that I'm really passionate about.
Well, let's get right into it. So my first question for everyone today is, how do you make your instant noodles fancy?
Oh, okay. So I make it fancy by putting an egg inside. So I break it into the pot and have it like boil inside like that. And then I also add corn.
So
I boil corn on the side, not inside. And I love coriander. So occasionally if I have coriander, that's like on top. Yeah.
Tom, how do you make your instant noodles fancy?
Mine is enoki mushroom.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because I don't know. I love mushroom so much. So then with my ramen or my instant noodle, I just chuck a lot of mushroom inside. Maybe some like fish ball, some meatballs inside, an egg as well. But that's pretty much it.
Mine is... For anyone that knows me, I'm obsessed with fried shallots. So I add fried shallots to every single thing that I eat. And I think just adding it to noodles or just any dish, it just instantly gives that extra flavor and that extra boost. And you know how like every fancy dish is always like little garnishes on top? That's my go-to garnish.
Is it because it's only like 40 calories per serving?
Yes. So low calorie, but don't add too much. It's just a really fancy garnish. Yeah.
Wow.
But onto other great news, I'm very happy to share that I've been nominated as the Young Entrepreneur of the Year.
Oh my God, yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
She's famous. She's important.
Very important.
But Tom, you're going to have some very big news to share as well, which we're not going to share yet. But
oh yeah, not yet.
We'll start teasing it now.
Oh my God.
We'll tell you, Monica, off air later.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah, I really don't know what's this. Okay.
But otherwise, let's get right into this week's show. We've got lots to share.
Let's take a live look now outside.
Ladies and gentlemen of America.
Ariana Grande licked and spit on the merchandise.
There can be 100 people in the room.
Leave Britney alone.
Catch me outside. How about that?
Rise and shine.
China. 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 China.
China. China. China.
All right, so our first segment today is about a podcast, which is actually one of my favorite podcasts. It's called Modern Love. There's been a TV show about it as well. We watched it, Tom. It's on Stan.
Modern Love? Which one was that one called?
It's the one with Anne Hathaway, how she...
Right. Yep.
So it's like a series of essays that was originally published in the New York Times, but now it's been made into a podcast, and now it's also been made into a TV show. But yeah, it's a really popular podcast and TV show. But this specific episode that I want to talk about was about an episode called Confronting Race on the First Date. So in last week's episode of the podcast, the show recounted an essay of an Asian American man who was named Andrew Lee, who went on a date with a woman. Their first date was supposed to be just a coffee, but it lasted for more than 9 hours. And by 2 a.m., Sarah Chen, who was on the date with Andrew, made an admission that his race might be an issue. So what makes this story really shocking is that she was actually also Asian American. So in the post essay interview, Sarah told the podcast that she wanted to date him and like him, but she couldn't because she just wasn't into Asians. And she grew up in Texas and said that she was, you know, raised to embrace her race in a different way.
Yeah, I think it was interesting because, and why I think it was helpful and it ultimately worked out is because Andrew could empathize with where I was coming from. But he also comes from a very different perspective. He came from a background where there weren't that many Asians, but his family really imbued in him the sense that you should be proud to be Chinese. The message that my parents sent me was a lot more around like, you just fit in, right? And people are always going to treat you differently. You know, when we had these conversations, something that we talked a lot about is, you know, how we think about our own race really affects kind of how we act.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember a time in your childhood where you felt that being Asian was undesirable?
I'd say like all the time growing up. Mm-hmm. My school was 2% Asian. That includes East Asian, South Asian. Mm-hmm. And ever since I was little, there was always, you know, the little jokes that children would have around Asian eyes. Mm-hmm. Whenever my mom packed me, which now looking back is like amazing food for lunch, but smelled different, right?
Yeah.
People would, you know, kind of look at my lunch and kind of put this little grimace and like, oh, why does that smell so weird? I also never felt beautiful when I was growing up. I always wanted to look like my friends who were blonde, blue-eyed, just because to me, when I looked in media, that was what was desired. And that really affected my view of, you know, who I was as a person. And so all I ever wanted to do was just fit in.
Well, before we delve into this topic, I want to ask you guys, has the topic of race ever come up during your dating lives? Monica?
Yes. Yes, it has. Not so much like with non-Asians. I think I've only dated Asians, even though when I was little, I spent 2 years in a school where my brother and I were the only Asians in the whole entire school. So we own like, you know, our crushes are always with like, you know, Aussies who have like blue eyes and blonde hair. But getting into uni when I started dating, all of my, all the people that I saw were Asians, but I did have an encounter with a guy who had told me that his parents only wanted him to date. Oh no, only wanted him to like marry Vietnamese girls because he was Vietnamese and I'm Chinese. So I think, I guess that was nice to tell me, but it's like, we were like, yeah, it was just a bit sad as well at the same time to know that my race or my where I was born is the reason why that we can't have a serious relationship.
Well, you know, your experience is very similar to, you know, Sarah Chen, who was in this essay. You know, she went to a very white school.
Yeah.
So growing up, do you remember, like, you wanted to, how did you, were you, did you want to fit in more, or were you really embraced your, with your Asian identity?
Actually, when I was little, definitely wanted to fit in so badly. I was born in China. So when we came to Australia, it was so new. I even didn't even know where we were going when we left China.
How old were you when you moved?
I was 7. And everyone was like, where are you going? I'm like, America.
Oh my God. You've been given the cheap version of America.
I know we were going to a Western country, but in my world, there was only China and America. So it was like, if we're leaving China, we're going to America. And then when we came to Australia, I just had to slowly learn that we're in a country called Australia.
How long did it take you to realize you weren't in America?
I don't know, about a year. To realize I wasn't in America, maybe 6 months. And yeah, like, we definitely wanted to fit in. Our parents, every day my dad would be like, what did you learn at school today? Give me like an English word that you learned at school today. And there was this huge thing to fit in. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they didn't want us to lose our Chinese as well. So they would make us, my parents would make us watch Chinese cartoons to make sure we still had our Chinese in us. Yeah, yeah. So it was a bit of a contradiction at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's like, we really want you to fit in, but we want you to not forget where you came from.
Yeah.
So yeah, for a very long time. And I feel like even some Asian kids at school, they would make being Asian a negative thing. But as I grow older, I realize, like, I'm so proud to have more than one culture in me.
That's so good to have.
Yeah.
Well, I think my experience has been a bit different from you guys, because I went to pretty much an all Asian school. Everyone in my class and my whole school was Asian. So being Asian was the majority of my school. But I do remember when I did travel to Taiwan, I met a guy who I went on a few dates with, and he told me that I was the first Asian person he's ever been on a date with, and he was Asian as well. He was Taiwanese. Ooh. And so that was interesting to me because, you know, I was like, wow, you're Asian, but like you only date non-Asians.
Did he only date you because you were from a Western country?
Look, that could be a possibility. Why? And, you know, I talked to him and I was like to him, you know, do you think it's because, you know, because he moved to the UK when he was younger to, you know, to learn to go to uni and stuff. So maybe he wanted to fit in so much in the UK that he ended up just dating, you know, non-Asians, because being Asian was the weird thing back in the UK, just like how it would be for you guys in Australia. Mm. And so, yeah, obviously it was just temporary because I was only there for a few weeks in Taiwan. And he was like to me, you know, he's like, oh, I had such a great time, you know, meeting you. I think I'm going to start dating Asians now. Oh, wow. Yeah. So look at me, like changing the world, making change happen.
Bringing more Asians back.
That's right. And I know you guys touched on this a bit about just earlier, but isn't it interesting how, you know, the way that your parents raise you can, you know, change and impact the way that you grow up as an adult and date people. So my question was going to be, what did your parents say about race growing up? Like, were they more supportive about you fitting in, or were they telling you to embrace your identity and you know, hold firm with your identity? Monica, you kind of answered that. So Tom, what are your thoughts?
Look, Asian parents are really racist. So like, they're one of the most racist people. I mean, like, I know that sounds pretty bad, but they are, like, growing up, and I'd always just, like, even my friends, they're like, oh yeah, no, our parents are really like darker people. And I guess because I guess growing up in a Malaysian country, what's happening is that the Chinese people don't get favored. So they don't get any government grants. A lot of the Malays get more of the government grants because they are known as the people of the land. So Chinese people are always discriminated against, especially Malaysia. So a lot of Chinese people who do grow up in Malaysia, they do get discrimination against people who are darker skin color. So when they move to, like, say, Western countries, like, oh, you know, stay away, we only want to date Chinese. So growing up, that's what is embedded in your head. But a lot of my friends, they, I think because of our generation, we're all very progressive. And I guess, yeah. But it's very hard, especially for Sarah, to escape from a family who has those different values, I guess.
I think my parents really wanted us to remember our like Chinese heritage and not forget Chinese and really embrace our culture. I think they were more so worried that we wouldn't make friends in school. Mm. That was something I think they worried about because it's important, I guess, to have friends. I think that's what they were worried about. I guess they didn't really think about the fact that being different could also make you friends. And I feel like, yeah, it's...
Do you think that's why you ended up dating... like your boyfriend now is Asian. Do you think that's why, even though you went to an all white school, or mostly white school, and you grew up liking non-Asian boys, because some people in our Asian community like only date exclusively non-Asians. Do you think that's the reason why you are very open to dating Asian people? Because you grew up embracing your Asian identity because your parents?
Yeah, maybe. I would say so. Also, Andy's very hot.
Let that be on the record.
Yeah, probably. I would say so. It's good because he was born here and he was raised here. But he also like appreciates Chinese culture, and that's what I love. That he's open minded because there's definitely Asian people out there who are not, and they think that it's only okay to be a certain way, which I think if you're not loving your heritage, you're also hating yourself. Mm. Yeah, it's kind of something that I wish more people can realize, that only if you embrace all of yourself, then you will come to be more accepting.
So yeah, I think it's really important that, you know, the way we grow up, we embrace identity. Because I remember I used to see a lot of kids, you know, growing up being like, oh, I'm so proud to be Cambo. I'm so proud to be Chinese. And they were always a bit cringy to me. I'm like, oh, you're just too proud. Like,
I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Monica, like, I say this in the nicest way. Like, yeah, you have been always been very, you always embrace your identity. And it's always been people that we knew who weren't as accepting, you know, they'll say Monica's so Asian. Monica's fob.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, like, what were your experiences on the other side of that?
It was definitely really negative. Because I think when I was in primary school, we had stayed in a primary school that we were the only Chinese kids. So it was easy to fit in because we also really liked everything else everyone liked. But I reckon it's because of that, when I got to a more Asian primary school in grade six, because I moved schools in grade six, that I wanted to be the total opposite, because I was kind of like, wow, this is something that I feel like I belong to a little bit more. You know, sometimes you feel a bit out of place. You realize that everyone around you looks a bit different, even though you're accepted the same way because you fit in. But then when I moved to a more Asian school, I felt like I needed to be more like this, to be more in touch with my culture. And obviously when I got into high school, people did start making comments like, you're so, like, so far, blah, blah, blah. And it was very negative. It made me feel like being Asian was not good and you have to be a certain way. But I had been that way in primary school, and It was good. It was okay. Like, I don't really see a difference anymore. But for a period of time, yeah, I did feel a bit negative when people said that. And yeah, it's quite sad that they even think that, actually, now that I think back.
Well, earlier in the year, I spoke to music therapist Asami, who we talked about internalized racism. And the one thing she said was, it's really important as Asian people, we consume media which are more representative of, you know, our lives. And that doesn't mean we, you know, we consume media that, you know, makes stereotypical, you know, mockery of Asian people, like The Hangover, for example. And she gave some really good examples, like, you know, what's that show called? Fresh Off the Boat. Like, that one's a really good one to watch. Or the, you know, Benjamin Law Family. That one's really good. But yeah, I'd love to know, everyone else, like, for our listeners, if you guys have anything else that you would like to add to this discussion, head over to our Facebook page and Instagram page and let us know what you think. There'll be more Lemon coming up, but first, here's a few words from today's sponsors.
Thank you.
Did you know this podcast is powered by Acast? Acast is the home of podcasting. For creators looking for freedom to grow their listeners and make money too. And creative brands looking for smart ways to advertise. Podcasters and advertisers in the know Acast. It's time you did too. Visit acast.com to find out more. Acast, for the stories.
So I would never think we'll ever be talking about this, but our next segment is going to be about a pasta. So Carl Lentz is a celebrity pasta. I think that's the right word. I think sometimes people call him a rock star pasta. So he's a pasta from Hillsong, which is obviously like the world's biggest church. There's like hundreds of thousands of members there. The celebrities like Justin Bieber. Who else is this? Selena Gomez.
The Kardashian family.
Oh, like wow. All the biggest celebrities go to this church. So Carl Lentz is one of the senior leaders at that church. And he's kind of been in the news this week, and not just in any news, but in like TMZ, the Daily Mail, all the entertainment goss websites. And it's been found out that he's been cheating on his wife with another woman, and all the paparazzis are currently following him, and he's been fired from the church now. His wife has also been fired from the church. But everyone is talking about celebrity pastors at the moment. And Tom, you are a man of the world and a man of faith.
And the man of the Lord.
And the man of the Lord. So I thought this would be a really good discussion because, you know, he's a church leader. He's a religious leader. What do you think about this? He's been getting a lot of criticism about this, about, you know, how can you be so hypocritical? How can you, you know, sin? Do you think it's fair that he's getting this criticism?
Honestly, because I'm trying to answer this in a very worldly view. I guess the best way to talk about it is if we read up James chapter 1, it talks about there's different types of sin.
All his church Bibles.
I'm feeling like
I have a question. How do you remember all these verse Bibles?
I think because I read the Bible every day, and what we do, we call it soaping. So you pretty much just read a passage like very, very little, reflect on it, meditate on the word of God, pray, and just ask what's God saying to you. So I do this every single day, and it just makes me feel full, complete.
Do you read like a random page every day?
No, we get assigned. So like head pastor, Pastor Philip will actually pick like a verse. So he'll pray about it, see what God's telling him, and then he'll share it with all of us. And then we just kind of follow his plan.
So you don't read the Bible from start to finish?
No, I don't. But you can do that. Some people do that. But for me, it just makes more sense to read what he's kind of getting from God as well.
So does he say on Sunday, does he say Monday you read this? Tuesday you read this, Wednesday you read this.
So we get like a PDF form. So then every three, it's kind of like uni a little
so
bit.
So modern.
Wow.
You get a PDF form. Like, do you know when like you have your lectures, we're going to do study anatomy on chapter one. And then by month two, we're going to be hitting this topic, blah, blah, blah. Mm. So you kind of just follow it. And it's very, very small. So it's like 3 sentences, 4 sentences per day. And that's it. So it's like a book will normally go for, let's say, 2 to 3 months. And then we'll come together as a church every 6 weeks, and then we discuss about it. And every week we'll also kind of go a little bit deeper. Oh, yeah.
It's like book club.
Yeah, a bit like a book club, actually.
It's very modern. It's very awesome.
But then with this Carl Lentz situation, the right thing to say is like, because in James chapter 1, it talks about there's different types of sin, right? So let's, for example, lying is a sin, stealing is a sin, cheating is a sin, murdering is a sin. So it's for me as a person I do lie sometimes, even though I try not to. I may tell a white lie, I may say something which is not the hopefully truth, but I'm not supposed to judge him for cheating I can't say that his sin is greater than my sin, if that makes sense. Like, we're all kind of equals. So that is the right answer. But I'll, like, at the flip of a switch, if I'm watching, like, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, I'll be like, Lisa Rinna, you stupid bitch. Oh my gosh, I hate her so much. Oh my gosh, F her. But the right answer is, coming from a very Christian biblical perspective, we're not supposed to judge him for what he's done, I guess.
Okay, that's a very diplomatic answer.
You can call it abortion. No, honestly, like, tell.
So does this mean he shouldn't have been fired because you're not supposed to judge him?
I thought about this as well, but
yeah, why did the church, if we're not supposed to judge him, the church is not supposed to judge him, why did they fire him and his wife?
From my own perspective, I personally, if I was in the head pastor, I'm not a pastor or anything like that or anything, but if I was a head pastor of Hillsong, I would have told him, you need to step down. Rather, I need to fire you, because I would acknowledge his mistake. Everybody's making mistakes, but it would be rather than you need to go, you're making a bad image for Hillsong.
But wouldn't it be more symbolic if they kept him on and just said, you know, everyone makes mistakes, no one's perfect. The church, this is what the church is. We accept anyone, you know, a sin is a sin. Wouldn't that be more symbolic if they kept him on?
Yeah, I don't know. But I guess
they need to work on their marketing angles.
They need to employ you.
Yeah.
But the hard thing is that usually if you are a pastor or a church leader, you normally kind of tap into what we call the Holy Spirit. So you ask the Holy Spirit for guidance. So, oh God, I don't know what to do with this Carl Lynn situation. Like someone who is senior of Carl Lynn's, but I don't know what to do. What do I do? So the Holy Spirit may say that you need to fire him or you need to do this. But that's between that person and God. So for me to say he should have done this is for me to say he's blasphemizing against the Holy Spirit. I don't know what the right answer is. But honestly, for me, from my own human perspective, I don't think he should have got fired, because we're supposed to, like, exactly 100% agree with you. From, like, step down or keep him in the church, he made a mistake. What happened between him and family and God is between them, and that's it.
Oh, yeah, I think cheating is definitely wrong. But in this situation, I don't know if I'm going to be speaking some nonsense here, but maybe, God spoke to them and said that he needed to go. Maybe his wife had done huge sacrifices for him and did not deserve the return. I mean, I've been reading a lot during lockdown, and not so much on the Bible, but there's definitely some spiritual stuff that I've read that talks about how the universe contacts you in its ways. So I don't want to deny that maybe this person had done something greater, like that is a greater sin. Maybe his wife had done so much bigger sacrifices for him that he shouldn't have done what he did. Yeah.
Look, okay, here I am. I've got some things to go with. Yeah. All right. So first of all, like a lot of, I guess like Hillsong, for example, first of all, they don't accept gay people they do accept gay people, but their stance isn't one where they're like, you know, being gay is normal. There's like, if you're gay, you can come to our church still. Everyone is welcome. And a lot of Christian people, and I'm not saying people in Hillsong, but a lot of Christian people say are opposed to gay marriage because they don't want it to ruin the definition of marriage, and that it's between a man and a woman. It's a sacred thing. But then the reality is these things happen all the time with heterosexual couples. They cheat on each other. They aren't exactly painting and honoring that definition of marriage. So why are they opposing, you know, gay marriage and marriage equality when there are people out there like Carl Lentz, who is first of all a man of God, and yeah, why are they so opposed to it? Like, that is my issue with I guess like the church and Christian people and Hillsong as well. I think Hillsong is very, in some ways, I think, problematic, but that's just my view.
With Hillsong and a lot of big churches, so their stance on gays is that you can be gay, but once you act upon it, that's considered as a sin, which I do not agree with. And so they're saying that's the reason why they don't want people to get married, because you are acting upon that sin. However, there's only 6 passages in the Bible, 3 in the Old Testament, 3 in the New Testament, that talks about gays and homosexuality.
Can you quote those verses so everyone can read them?
So yeah. The first one talks about Adam and Eve, so that's the first one they quote. I think the other one's in Leviticus, where it talks about a man shall not lie with him. There's another one in the Old Testament. The other 3 is one in 1 Timothy, where someone's talking about it. Another one, I can't remember off by heart, in Matthew, and another one somewhere. But I've done a lot of research on this. And the thing is, with disclaimer, I could always be wrong. Like, the things that I'm researching could be wrong as well. But what I know so far with gays and homosexuals and the Bible, in 1946, there was an RSV version. So there's a different version of the Bible, right? And in 1946, it got translated to a newer version. And it was paid by an American corporation to do this. And the guy who translated it was actually from an old word. I think the word it was like Arunas or Kai or something, but the word actually meant pedophile, people who abuse their rights over young males, young females, like kids. But this word got translated to homosexuality, and boom, 50, 60, 70 years later, there's been a huge, huge, huge rift. So a lot of people who are, and the New International Version is one of the most read Bible version in the world. And that's why it's from those three verses that people have created such a big negative stance on homosexuality.
Wow, I wasn't expecting you to quote all those verses. I was just kidding.
Yeah. You opened the book.
But the thing is, I could always be wrong. You know, my research career, that's always a disclaimer I always put out.
Yeah.
But this is what I've read so far, and I could always change my mind in the future. But with this Carl Lentz situation, what's a bit sad is that Carl Lentz is actually, I think, very pro-gay and very pro-LGBT. During the Australian rights, when gay marriage was actually getting passed in the bill, Hillsong made a very vocal saying that, no, like we were opposed to it. Whereas Carl Lentz, he's like, why should I need a comment? Jesus didn't say anything about it. So he's actually a very big man of love, accepting everybody.
Yeah.
And for him to say that, actually standing up for the LGBT community and now people degrading him because he made a mistake, that's the part which is actually a little bit sad.
Well, first of all, I think if we detach him from his religion, I think he's a jerk for cheating on his wife.
Mm.
And I just want to make that clear.
I just want to make that very clear
because I feel like we're giving him a hall pass just because he's a church leader. Okay. I just want to make that clear. Yeah. That's my opinion. I think if you detach him from his religious position, I think he's a jerk for cheating on his wife. And his wife shouldn't have been cheated on. She shouldn't have been fired from her job just because
she got fired.
She got fired.
Yeah,
why?
They've both been fired from the church.
Victim.
Exactly, which I don't understand why. Mm. So I just want to make that clear. But look, he has 700,000 followers on Instagram. Do you guys think it's right for pastors and religious people to be idolized? Like, isn't that completely missing the point? Like, shouldn't you be idolizing, you know, God? Or why are these people getting idolized?
Okay, first.
Well, I thought pastors were a messenger. So, yeah, it does. You do have a point there where shouldn't they be idolizing God and not the messenger? But I'm not sure, are certain messengers more correct than others or more accurate or more in touch?
Yeah, that's a bit hard.
Yeah.
Because some people could be saying it's from God, but it's not from God and preaching the wrong message. Mm-hmm. I think him having 700,000 followers isn't an issue if he's bringing everything back to God. If he's saying, if he has 20 million followers, 100 million followers, if he's like, let's say his bio is Jesus, you know, people like put like a cross emoji on there. Like I put my Instagram bio. I said, Jesus loves everyone.
Aww.
Jesus loves you and I, just in case. But I feel like if you do have a lot of those followers and you direct them to God, you're constantly saying, don't worship me. You know, I, like what you said, Monica, I'm just the messenger. I'm just trying to bring people to God. I think that's okay. But if it comes to a point where people are worshiping you, people are idolizing you and people are putting you on the pedestal more than God, that's an issue.
I feel like that's the case with Carl Lentz. I feel like a lot of people look not at him, but look up to him. And I think, I don't know, I've been watching a lot of cults documentary and this is how cults start.
But when they look up to him, they look up to him in a way that same way people look up to like King David, where they think of him, well, this person is actually yearning and chasing God's heart rather than, well, he is God. And I think that's a clear difference because in the Bible, there's a guy called King David. So long story short, he's like, he effed up so many times.
Yeah.
He's pretty much screwed up so many times, but because of his intention is to chase God's heart.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like Carl Lentz is coming from. I don't want to defend him too much because it looks like, but you know.
But could you say it's the loyalty that he has to God that is being worshipped by others?
Possibly. And people be like, I want to be like Carl Lentz, not necessarily be like, worship him, but like, oh, because he's so devoted to God, he probably prays, reads the Bible, blah, 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 blah. I want to be more like him.
Mm.
Well, we'll love to know what everyone else thinks. Do you guys think that, well, what do you guys think about Carl Lentz's affair? Like, does it belong in the TMZ mags? And also, where do you draw the line between celebrity and worship leader? We'd love to know what you guys think. Head over to our Facebook page and Instagram page and let us know what you think.
Recommendation time. And because you are our honorary guest, Monica, you can introduce anything you want to do for recommendation this week.
Okay. Well, the one that the recommendations I have, it's recommendation that I have isn't like very fancy or high production, but I feel like it really reflects the Australian culture to a certain extent. So it's on Netflix. It's called Middle Upper Bogan.
I love it. I love how you work in communications and you work in the diversity and multiculturalism department, and you're recommending this show called Bogan what?
Middle Upper Bogan. No, okay. So I just want to say that I feel like a lot of Australian films don't get recognized as much as the American ones. Even us in Australia, we watch a lot of American films. And it's only when I watched this is actually filmed in Melbourne, that I realized that it was very in touch with the local culture. And I still think that it's nice to be spreading something that's of Australian production.
Is it like a documentary or is it?
No. So it's about this doctor. So she lives like in the Toorak's of Melbourne. Ooh. And she finds out that she was adopted by her mother, who's also kind of like, you know, that Toorak kind of vibe. And then she finds out that her parents are Bogans who, you know, they live a bit more like paycheck to paycheck. And then so it's about these two different sort of socioeconomic status families like molding together and mingling together. So I feel like it's very reflective of certain groups in our city. Yeah.
For anyone who's listening doesn't know what a Bogan is, a Bogan's like a redneck in America.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think we explained that before on the podcast.
Yeah,
right?
But these guys are really nice. I loved the reason why I love it is because I watched it again during lockdown because I kind of missed the outside world, and it reflects a lot of just, you know, how we like Bogan's actually very nice. I don't even like using that word, but that's what they use in the series. There's only three seasons, but yeah, it's just good to see something that is relatable to our culture. Sorry, not our culture, our city. Mm. Yeah. Because sometimes when you watch American films, you don't really understand a lot of it.
Especially the jokes as well.
Yes. And also the cities. Like I was watching Big Bang Theory and they were talking about Pasadena and California and all of this stuff. And I thought they were all together, but then I looked at the map and I'm like, oh. So yeah. So it's, I don't know. It's good to give Australian films a highlight sometimes.
Well, it's the weekend, but you've done your job today. You spread multiculturalism.
The Aussie side of me and the Asian side of me.
Where can people watch this show?
It's on Netflix. I think it was also on ABC. I can't remember if it was funded by the government, but I did see that there was some sort of Victorian support behind it because it's a local film. So, yeah.
A lot of ABC or shows, TV shows, have like pretty good storylines or pretty good things behind them.
Yeah. I just really like the family vibe of it. It's like two very unlikely to be families becoming one. So it's really nice. Yeah.
Well, I would love to chat more, but unfortunately we've reached the end of the show. Thank you so much for joining us today, Monica.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was kind of in the spur of the moment, so thank you.
It was literally a few hours ago.
This was my birthday gift to you, so happy birthday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. All right.
Well, as always, thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe to us on wherever podcasting app you're listening to. But otherwise, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, podcaster, meet Acast. We're the top independent podcast network for creators in the know. We empower you to develop your podcast idea, find your audience, and grow listener relationships wherever those listeners are. You'll also find a whole range of ways to make money, from membership plans for paying fans to our fully curated and creative advertising experience. Visit acast.com/network to find out more. Acast, for the stories.